increasingly, there's a lot of discussion about leadership has something to do with spirituality. That for a long time, we sort of thought leadership meant learning how to run a meeting or teaching somebody how to run an organization. But increasingly, those who do research on leadership are finding that it's very complex and that it's not just skills. That as a matter of fact, one of my colleagues who helped me start the center sent me a note the other day. He was asked to write a preface to a new book on leadership. His name is Harlan Cleveland, and he's written a lot on public issues. And he was ambassador to NATO for a while from the United States and has done a lot of different things. And when he first started our center, we thought that leadership development was about skills. And Harlan wrote me this note and faxed me this piece the other day, which I want to share with you. And he said, well, I think maybe it has more to do with attitudes than skills. And then he went on to list the attitudes that he thought were absolutely central to leadership. And the first one he thought was intellectual curiosity. And you might think about yourself and the people that you work with about how do we sort of then build these kinds of attitudes. The second one is interest in what other people think and why they think that way. And I'd like to get into that attitude tonight in our discussion of leadership and spirituality. What do we think about that and why do we think that way? Third one, responsibility for envisioning a future that's different from a straight line projection of the present. So he would call that planning improvisation. So seeing planning like jazz as opposed to a cookie cutter answer. Fourth, a hunch that most risks are there to be taken. That attitude of sort of risk taking, that we have to take some chances. Fifth, a mindset that crisis is normal, tensions can be promising, and complexity is fun. How do we build that kind of mindset in ourselves? Sixth, the realization that paranoia and self-pity are for people in communities who don't want to lead. Seventh, personal responsibility for the general outcome of our efforts. So how do we build that kind of mindset that we're the best in all we've got? And then finally, what he calls unwarranted optimism, which is the conviction that there must be some more upbeat outcome than would result from adding up all the available expert advice. And I think oftentimes, you know, our spirits are sort of broken and we think, how can we possibly get beyond this? So those are some of the attitudes about leadership that Helen Cleveland would feel are absolutely essential. So, which causes me to think, then how do we build those attitudes in ourselves and others? And what I'd like to do tonight is get into a discussion of the spirituality of leadership, but to do it in a dialogue form so that we kind of share our own ideas and then sort of investigate why is it we've kind of come to think about leadership that way, or that spirituality is or isn't connected with leadership. And in order to get into it, I wanted to share with you a couple of resources. Some of you may be familiar with Peter Kastenbaum, and he's written a couple books. One is called Leadership, the Inner Side of Greatness, and the other one is The Heart of Business. And Peter describes this in this way. He says, if this is our organization or community, what holds our organization and community up are its people? So that people hold up the community. Do you believe that? Does that feel right to you? That sort of organizations and communities are made up of the people. And he'd say, what holds the people up is this part here, which he says is the soul or the spirit. And so then if you want to lead the community or an organization, you can't ignore this. And so how do we strengthen our soul or our spirit? And that would become the work in the leadership center. Another person that talks about this is Parker Palmer, and I just, on the way out here, I read a speech that he had given called The Leadership Within. But this is the leadership within then of the people. And how do we then go and discipline ourselves to go within and to look at our soul and our spirit before we start getting too busy in the outside world? Of sort of tending to that. And how do we tend to that? Another person that gets into this is a colleague of mine who is a political scientist, who's done a lot of work on the nature of change and sustainable change. And we started looking at organizations that are able to kind of initiate a change in the community, create a new program that's successful and sustain it over time, like a program for poverty programs around the country. A lot of them have them to do with public programs, human service programs, community-based programs, and community organizations. And one of the things in Paul's research that came up time and time again was that the cultures of all of those organizations had a common theme, was that they had faith. What does that mean? That's often, that was the word that they described, kind of their culture. And these are not organizations connected to the church. And so he was really challenged to kind of think more about that, because there was that spiritual notion. Maybe another word that could be used would be they had hope, that it sustained their energy. So I'd like to open it up and just get some ideas out on the table, and I'll take some notes as to kind of, when you think about the spirituality of leadership, is there such a thing? Has there been such a thing for you? Let's just kind of have a discussion of that. What comes to your mind when you think of the spirituality of leadership?
I don't know if I can respond directly to your question, but when you drew the picture on the board, when you talked about the part in the middle of an organization being the soul of the organization, I've been in organizations that felt like they didn't have a soul. And in my opinion, that the organization doesn't go anywhere, and there's very little opportunity to have leadership. I mean, it just feels like things are in the drift, because the organization doesn't know what they're about and what's important.
So part of having soul is knowing what's important?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Where you have been, where it has had a soul?
Yeah, I guess I have been.
So I'm going to take some notes, because I think it'd be interesting to sort of say together, if we were to talk about building the spirit, the spirituality in order for organizations to more effectively lead, what would that be composed of?
Yeah.
But for you, it would be...
Well, knowing what's important is certainly part of it, right?
Okay.
I like what you said about the leadership within, and I'm hearing that, I don't know if you were implying, or if Parker Palmer was implying, that each individual in the organization is kind of in tune with what is important, or maybe what their goals would be as being part of that organization, and then hopefully putting that together in an authentic way, you know, so that everybody knows everybody else's goals, and if it clicks together, that makes a real dynamic, spiritual, you know, organization that's meeting all sorts of needs.
So it's not just an organization knowing what it's about and what's important, but also individuals having done some of their own work.
Yeah.
So that and there's some common ground about that.
Mm-hmm.
That we come together on. We know together we're working on something together that's important to all of us.
So it's a basic motivator.
Mm-hmm.
To a common goal or whatever interest.
I don't think it has to be a common goal, at least a compatible goal.
Well, compatible, yeah. That's very true, because a lot of people have different names.
Mm. And I was thinking that authenticity, or really being honest with each other about your real goals.
That's right.
So that, honesty becomes important.
Yeah, and I think that's important.
Real honesty, where?
Yeah, and I think a lot of us are in organizations which just kind of adopt the party line and say, well, everybody else thinks that's a good idea, so it must be a good thing to do. And then the organization dies, and we wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because people aren't being honest with themselves or with each other.
Or it's too difficult, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes the environment's hard to kind of say what's really on your mind.
But people are not honest with each other. Sooner or later, people feel manipulated.
So you would agree that that's essential?
Yeah. Can't talk straight.
Yeah.
That's great.
you look at some of the writings of Abraham Lincoln, you notice that he grew much more during his time as the president in his spirituality and his dependence on God. And so I think people, as they see themselves more as a leader and have more responsibility and challenges, that dependency and the realization of a higher being is necessary.
But you can't do it, that one can't do it all. So that's really a personal thing that you come to the table with, of sort of being at ease with that, of not being comfortable of not having all the answers.
It seems in order to have an organization work, that all of those who come into it, need to have a vital spiritual life. Because each one is like a magnet. Each one has tremendous energy. And those organizations in which people have this are able to rise above their own petty needs and not put barriers up. It seems that organizations that really work, that I have seen, and of course at this point I'm talking about the church, mm-hmm. It's when they have an active prayer life. We can talk about being honest, but if our prayer life doesn't exist very much, if we are not developing spiritually, we won't even be able to be honest. We won't even sometimes know what honesty is. We won't even know ourselves enough to know. So it seems to me that the very first is the relationship with God, and I believe that this is one of the greatest weaknesses of the church today, that we are not really convinced of the efficacy of prayer. And it is not used the way it needs to be used.
So that would be what we're talking about, is that when we think about this notion of that leadership, the spirituality of leadership, and leadership, is defined. Let's define leadership as sort of giving, being of service, whether individually or collectively, not necessarily having a position. And so most all of us, and I think probably all of us in this room, aspire to be of service. And so then a lot of people are sort of discussing, there's a spiritual notion about that kind of leadership. And so we're trying to get to have a discussion of what's that about in our experience when our service has had a spirit about it. And so this is a suggestion of maybe a key resource for that is an active prayer life. And that another suggestion would be that there's some relationship with God or a higher being. Somebody else had mentioned that.
Take exceptions there. It can't be a requirement because communities are made up of all kinds of people. And we cannot tie honesty to a spirituality or prayer life. I can't do that.
I'm not arguing. I'm saying at this point, I was zeroing in on the church.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I have seen communities work very well, community organizations. But invariably, when they did work very well, these were people who were spiritually viable people. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is where the church's greatest social action is, when people go out and this dynamite, spiritual dynamite starts exploding.
Mm-hmm. So, this notion of prayer for some, perhaps, maybe in some organizations, but as a possibility, but not maybe in a requirement for all?
Well, I like that the spirituality is there in all of them, but it's not tied to religious connotations.
Mm-hmm. I'm not arguing with your point again. I just am trying to clarify myself.
I want to keep it as open because I'm more interested in general community organizations where you can draw on the resources we have in the church setting or, you know.
We know there are people who do draw on it. There are ways, I truly believe, of doing it. And it's in the tone, the spiritual tone of the leaders that do finally get up. There are people who do draw others. There are people who can speak with authority. There are people who come across as being very honest. And it's because of their spiritual growth. And I would say not just some relationship with God. I would say a deep relationship with God. Because that is everything. And until we begin to realize that, we're not going to change things.
Now, we don't need to agree on all of these things.
That's
but
right.
I think
I'm just trying to clarify where I'm coming from.
And I think I understand what you're saying. Is that for you, that would be really essential and important. And that's in your experience, that spirituality of leadership, that's reflected in the situations that you've been in. Hear that.
That's one reason why the Gettysburg Address was so. Lincoln prayed for hours. I believe the church in some ways has begun. I truly believe there has to be a spiritual renewal in the church.
Okay, that's an addition. I mean, that's a contribution that the church can make.
I do not believe that the church today on the whole knows what it is when it talks about the Holy Spirit.
Okay. What about some other ideas of other people where... I didn't mean that. But I think I've gotten those notes. And I think that's a very important point. So I wasn't telling you to be quiet, but I'm trying to get sort of a smorgasbord of ideas of some of you. What do you think of when you think about the spirituality of leadership, either in your own experience or a project that you've been a part of where you felt like it had a lot of spirit?
Conviction, authenticity.
Say more about authenticity.
Comes from within the person. Person knows what it's driving at. May not know what it's all about, but they know what they want.
What they want? Could you please repeat? The ladies here haven't been able to hear.
Authenticity. So a congruency of knowing, not necessarily having all the answers, but being real clear on what they want. You had another word that you described. I forgot. Authenticity and help me out here.
I didn't hear it, so I don't know.
I didn't catch.
Conviction. Say more about that. What does that mean?
Oh, we know when somebody is convinced of what they're doing. Okay. You can't see it. Then you either say, yeah, good, indifferent, or bad, and jump in or you don't. And it inspires people.
Mm-hmm. So not wishy-washy.
Right.
Sort of a clarity.
I think of three things that I wanted to hear. The first is to lift up purpose or meaning, or to affirm or help us coalesce around purpose. And the second is to give us a sense of the potential that we have, so that we have hope that we can make a difference. And the third would be then to affirm the progression that is made. In other words, whatever we do, to find in it some kind of progression towards our goals, so we become encouraged that even in our failures, we may be accomplishing something.
That ability to learn from our mistakes. that that becomes a resource to us, if we have the courage to look at it, to learn from it. I had the experience where I was talking about that, because I think that's difficult to do, is to learn from our mistakes, because sometimes we're sort of embarrassed by it, or afraid of it, or ashamed of it. And the University of Minnesota, in my opinion, had done something where I thought we were replicating our mistakes. And we had done a couple things. We had an initiative going on, and then it didn't work out because we didn't inform the public about what we were trying to do and how we were doing it. And so it blew up in our face. Mm-hmm. And so we shoveled it under the rug. And then 6 months later, another issue blew up in our face. And when I was thinking about it, it was like the same as the last one. So I was talking about it in a speech that I was giving, and there happened to be two regents in the audience. I got back to my office, and they called me. And I thought, oh, I was in trouble. Well, it was really interesting. It was a good discussion. But I think that what you're saying is right, that we need to have courage to look at what doesn't work very well for us, because there's a real richness in that, by saying, what does that tell us? I mean, I think that that's why the good news and the bad news of history is both important, that if we have the chance to really...
Oh, well, that comes to communication.
Communication?
Communicate. Everybody knows what it's all about, where they are.
So, open communication.
Yeah, openness. Open process.
Massaged communication.
Yeah.
Do others agree with that? Sort of having access to knowing what's going on, as opposed to only certain people have parts of information, and then you feel manipulated.
Yeah.
But that there's an openness about it, which maybe relates back to that notion of honesty.
Yeah,
that sometimes when you're in a place where you don't have access to good information, it almost feels dishonest.
Mm-hmm. You said something a moment ago, which I think is right at the heart of having a leader, and that's courage. It takes a lot of courage to stand up and say, we ought to try something different. It takes a lot of courage to be honest, especially in some settings.
How do we build courage in ourselves? I mean, when you think of a time that you felt like you were sort of courageous, what gave you that energy?
It's faith and conviction. Faith that you know what you're doing is correct. And then conviction to carry out.
Okay.
Prayer.
Experience.
Experience.
Previous successes.
Okay. So that kind of experience that sort of tells you that it's tested in some way. So courage brings in a lot of the other themes.
Because I'm trying to answer this question, sometimes I get off on ethical leadership or moral leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you could help me by just defining the difference between those two of spiritual leadership. We're focusing on.
Well, I'm raising the question for us. What seems to be the composition of spiritual leadership?
Okay.
And ethical leadership and ethics is almost become a discipline. And so we have a lot of people here in Holden this week that are their life's work is to examine ethics and ethical leadership. And even people who are spending their whole lives looking at sort of ethical dilemmas from a public perspective. So like healthcare, where, you know, who gets medicine and for what reason? Or when you have limited resources in a society, what's the discipline then of deciding? Or ethics will often involve society as a whole. So, and then raises questions about work in society where we come to the table with very different value systems. So whose values count? And also, and so very complex. But I was just, tonight, I thought it'd be interesting to kind of get people thinking with me about, for you and your own experience, when your leadership has had sort of a spirit about it, what's that about? Because I think all of us have times when we're trying to help somebody else build their leadership capacities, either in an organization or with colleagues or friends. And some are saying, you know, it's really important that leadership have a spiritual quality about it, that if it's going to have some staying power. And so I thought we could have a discussion about what's that about, how to think about that. Does that help?
Yeah, it does, because those other dimensions have some of what we've been talking about, honesty and communication and conviction. So that helps me try and focus a little bit more.
What about some other...
I just question the definition here that some would define spiritual as anything that is kind of good. I'm thinking of spiritual as if there is a spiritual reality that is beyond the obvious perceived reality. And so I guess for me, spiritual leadership is one who perceives beyond the immediate obvious reality and can perceive a spiritual reality and bring that dimension into whatever is being done.
So it's beyond the present, beyond the sort of obvious.
Beyond the obvious, I guess. Very present, but beyond the obvious.
There's some who, you know, this notion of good and bad. In the field of leadership, there's some who say, well, they're good leaders and bad leaders. So Hitler was a bad leader.
He was a good leader.
But it depends on, but if you use good and bad to qualify leadership, there are others who say, no, there's only good leadership. That when they refer to leadership, they mean only that inherent leadership is sort of a good quality. That everything else outside of that gets a different name, like tyrant or like something else. And so that they and so there are lots of debates, and we're not going to get into that either. You know, that's another evening's discussion. But. You know, there are some people now who are saying, well, you can't look at leadership without looking at spirituality. And so I thought that I'd like to know from us, what's our sense of that?
I'm sort of, on one hand, dissecting, thinking of someone in particular. My home is in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, and last summer we hosted the Commonwealth Games, and it was a most resounding success. I mean, we actually finished in the black. They made a profit on the games. 10,000 volunteers in the city turned out to host. They put in hundreds and hundreds of hours. And it was like the entire city of 300,000 people came together and absolutely were unified in this vision of hosting the world. And it was an incredible success, and our church looks at that and says, we can't get volunteers to host a picnic. How come we've got these people that are putting in literally hundreds of hours doing a full-time job and then working all night on the Commonwealth Games? Mm-hmm. And sort of trying to go through that and think what was in that. And I know in our slightly more cynical and bitter moments, we decided that what was one of the things, the ingredients, was that there were perks that you go, oh, well, the volunteers got things, you know, like we can't give them because there were sponsors. But looking at the leadership, it was incredible because there was a lot of opposition for the city hosting the games. The city people thought it's only going to bring traffic and problems and a lot of people, and we'll have to expand the airport, we'll have to expand the stadium, and we'll have to do this. And there were just a tremendous number of people who said no. And as I say, by the end of it, everybody was saying, I was there in, was it 94, that everybody wanted to be a part of it because the spirit of it was wonderful. I mean, it was a week-long party for everybody from all over the world. And I'm not, it's many people have tried to dissect it since then and say, what was it? Certainly a unifying vision was something. And it's interesting how once we passed that critical point and people decided it wasn't going to be a major flop, they weren't going to lose millions of dollars, it wouldn't be an embarrassment to the world, a lot of people then jumped on the winning team and said, yes, we will be part of this, we will kind of push it through.
Maybe part of that falls back to this notion of sort of experience, like you can do it, it's well thought out, it's informed.
And once it was proven that it was, then that was certainly very enticing, very compelling for people to say, yeah, I do want to be part of that. That looks like fun to me.
So trust? Was it trust that it was gonna, that it was credible?
The credibility was important to say, here's a guy that can, because they actually had at least two kingpins who were trying to guide this through and give up and said they would stand back and let somebody else take over. When this man was put in place, I think many people were still skeptical at that point. But this, I mean, the process of coming to host a Games is like a 5-year game plan. And the man who did take over was extremely dynamic and got everybody going. That was great.
I want to come back to something you said about perks. What about some sort of project that you felt was really meaningful for you, that you were a part of? What were the perks for you, if you could think of it in those terms? Was there a certain kind of personal satisfaction or a perk, if you will? Not necessarily a physical perk. Was there that component?
A big component is that if I'm in position to lead what I like to do, then I need a lot of people on my project. That's a big perk.
Okay, so...
Yeah, it's a big ego trip.
Okay.
Isn't it? Bring something out.
But for the rest of the people on the project following you, then what's in it for them?
They're part of it, but it's leadership, the initiation of things, and that you started something is a big focus.
So you really felt like you were part of it, that you really made a contribution.
And then you give other people the same thing and say, yeah. Take that part, and that's your deal.
Right, so that this notion
they have the same feeling than different parts. No, I think that's it.
So that something comes back to you. Mm-hmm. That there is not maybe necessarily a tangible thing, but that you get...
It's accomplishment.
A sense of accomplishment would not be another perk.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it perks because there's so much in the
right. But I just wanted to get back to that because I thought, well, for those of us who have been a part of something where it felt that it was something that was meaningful to us.
There's a benefit, call it benefits. Okay.
But I mean, you were talking about a situation where we sort of put down perks, maybe there
but,
is
you know,
that
I think
part
they
of it.
Were a big enticement in that particular example. Perhaps not what actually kept the wave going, but in fact, there were so many giant corporate sponsors that threw in a lot of perks. I mean, 10,000 volunteers walking around in Reeboks tracksuits and saying, yes, I was there. People did seem to go out. That was part of the enticement to join. It may not have kept them going, but
yes.
Pride in the city, in their city, I would think would be a big thing.
So pride.
Sense of belonging too.
Yes.
If everybody's there, I don't want to be left out.
Yes, that's
Yes,
I think so, very much so.
I was just going to talk about belonging. I think one of the sicknesses of our society is we don't have community like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
People don't feel like they belong.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, people could feel like, goodness, I belong to something.
Sure.
And there were so many involved. I really believe that when people are given a chance to feel that they belong, even if it's to a small group, that's it. And one reason why churches are losing is because people don't feel they belong. So people come in the front door and meet the back.
So you don't have a sense of community. I was made painfully aware that on a project that we were working on with, you know, the low-income neighborhood, we surveyed all the young men age 8 to 12. And we asked them, and these were kids that were really troubled. It was a troubled neighborhood, and there were a lot of there's a lot of gang action in this neighborhood. And we interviewed all the boys, age 8 to 12, and a very high percentage, in the 90 percentile, suggested that they felt they belonged nowhere, not to a family, not to a school. When they described what it meant to feel like they belonged. So that would be an indication of this notion of needing to kind of, humans need to belong. I mean, there's a sense of needing to sort of be connected with each other. So maybe part of the spirituality of leadership is linking into that connectedness. Yes.
One thing she mentioned, and I think it goes back into the leadership, it ties a lot of other things together, is trust of the people working on it. And it's not just a blind trust, because I've known leaders who I wouldn't trust, yet they're good leaders, but you trust them on these certain projects. You know, you knew where you stand and you knew them, you know. So it's kind of a two-edged sword there, you know, that it's not just a blind trust, but there's others that, you know, you'll stab somebody else in the back, but as long as you didn't stab them in the back, you know, or knew where you stood with them, or then put these trust for being able to accomplish the project.
This is a little bit off the subject, but one thing that comes to mind as just now is something that leadership's not. I think leadership is not having all the direction and guidance coming from one person. And even if you have one person that tends to have the best sense of the forward motion, it can't translate into effective leadership if that person assumes that they're just going to be able to tell everybody what to do. Mm-hmm. I really don't think that the power and the success comes that way. When you gave that list of things, qualities about leadership from the person on the preface, you talked about having a genuine interest in why people feel the way they feel.
What other people think and why?
Genuine interest in people who think differently than they do. And it's a way to speak about that sense of engaging the other people in the group and caring about how they feel and the diversity and having the sum come out greater than the parts, you know. I mean, we think of someone being a leader when they have this great vision, and that's really an important part of it, but that's not what it is exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting that even when people were saying, you know, knowing what's important both as an organization and individual, that was kind of earlier on, it wasn't stated just one person knowing, but it's everybody knowing. It also conviction and clarity. I think the implication there was collective conviction, not the conviction of one. So that would be real consistent with this notion of kind of shared power, shared responsibility, not one person sort of being in charge and the rest of us just kind of following orders.
We don't follow very well anymore. We want to be part of it.
I think maybe after, you know, the goal has been accomplished or in the situation, the spiritual leadership, the point of composition would be the acknowledgement of that. You know, maybe some leaders or some organizations that are working on something, after it's been made, they take the credit, but spiritual leadership might, the leader might acknowledge that it was beyond their own abilities.
So it goes back to what somebody mentioned, is kind of a sense of accomplishment, but acknowledging that collective accomplishment, not just one person taking all the credit.
And acknowledging that it could have I'm just thinking about, like, where I work, you know, the president, when something, when we, at the end of the year, you know, he said, you know, we have got to realize this is beyond us. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of acknowledgement. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's a concern that sometimes is expressed in organizations that I'm a part of in the private sector, where the pay is so much more mm-hmm. greater mm-hmm. among positional leaders than among the rest of the staff in an organization. And there's concern about that serious, that authentic recognition of shared accomplishment. So it's one thing for the CEO to recognize as a positional leader that we all did it. But some people measure authenticity by the budget.
Yeah.
And that, are we for real about this? You know, and so that's a complex, in and of itself, it can get, it's a very complex thing. About that sincerity.
Yes.
Are you going to say something else?
I'm just aware that it's often difficult to know who's going to be the good leader ahead of time. I've been in positions where selecting leaders and people I thought were going to be whiz-bang blew it royally, mm-hmm. and other people I thought didn't have it came through mm-hmm. beautifully. So I've just been aware of how difficult it is sometimes to know ahead of time who's going to be able to do that.
Maybe it goes back to this point of not one person can do it all, and a recognition that it's going to take many, and sort of a sense of forgiving, so that if we try something and we're not the right sort of match for the responsibilities that we're taking on, that there's that kind of flexibility. Because it is kind of an art form to kind of get ourselves aligned in the right place and at the right time. And sometimes we don't know that in advance. That's sort of learning from our mistakes. And so I think I certainly benefited from sort of making bad mistakes, but then sort of asking for forgiveness and getting on with it, you know, and hoping I don't sort of replicate the same things. So that can be really difficult and challenging.
No, what is it? I mean, I guess what you learn from that is what? Why were you wrong in picking the other person as the leader, and what made the other person? That's the whole thing we're trying to figure out, is mm-hmm. that it's not on the surface, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it, if we can, as we're trying to determine here, is good leaders virtually, mm-hmm. and it is something that doesn't come to the surface each of the other times.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I think, something that's important is being able to, I was going to say absorb, but absorb is not the right word, deflect. Being able to be the bad guy, being able to be the big mean person and just roll with it and say, yeah, being able to make the decisions that not only say, yes, you can, but say, no, you can't. And it's very difficult sometimes, I think, to take all that, to say, I mean, on the smallest level, to say, mm-hmm. no, you can't have Saturday off.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
So maybe part of it has to be the ability to make decisions. Somebody, at some points in a lot of projects, we just need somebody to have the courage take a stand and make a decision.
But it's not just some making boundaries. The decision. The decision could be easy enough. It's putting up, it's then,
taking the criticism.
It's taking the criticism. It's rolling with that. It's mm-hmm. actually being the,
And also accepting the criticism.
Accepting the criticism.
And passing it down to the group.
Yeah, I think even sheltering the group is, in some instances,
good. Because mm-hmm. it'll keep the dynamics and optimism of the group mm-hmm. going, where you may be catching flack from or from other things. And if some leaders do a very good job of deflecting this, mm-hmm. so that it doesn't affect working in the group and optimism.
Yeah, it can get you all off focus. I mean, if you're on target and then all of a sudden there's something that doesn't work right, now the real mission becomes, let's find somebody to blame.
Yeah, right? Yeah, very much so.
But the ability to absorb that, kind of get on with it, and somebody having the courage to kind of address that.
Yeah.
We use different categories to identify the leadership of Jesus, such as prophet, priest, and king. And so a group needs different things at different times. So leaders may look very different depending on the need of the group. There are times when you're trying to get a task done, you need a king. There's other times you need to be caught up short and say, hey, you're going the wrong direction, you need a prophet.
So flexibility.
So that, yeah, maybe different people and different qualities that make up leadership.
Goes back also to this notion of one person can't do it all. And so when humans are running things, you know, this notion that we need different people to draw on with different capacities. I think maybe that's part of, you know, a lot of people are, and a lot of organizations are now looking at sort of this notion of partnerships and teams and self-directed teams and the collective is becoming, as problems become more and more complex and difficult, the notion that we really do need each other, that as much as we'd like to sort of be heroes, that that's not possible.
A leader is a good listener, does a lot of listening, and listens with a third ear.
So what does that mean for you? What is that?
Well, the third ear means that what is said actually verbally is not only heard, but the underlying meaning or the emotionality or whatever. There's all kinds of messages given when something is said very often.
So it's not, it's listen and really hear and understand, just kind of place. Stephen Covey talks about that. Some of you have probably read his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He's also written a book called Principle-Centered Leadership. But he talks a lot about that. He would certainly agree that it's the rigor of listening carefully and really hearing, as opposed to listening and at the same time, I'm hearing you, I'm thinking about how I'm going to respond. But really being there eye to eye. I mean, some of you talk about caring. I mean, listening in a caring way. That I really care what you say, and I want to make sure I heard that and understood it.
Are all the beliefs or values about leadership that we've been talking about, are they all in that category of spiritual? You know, because when you attach that term to it, you know, it's a spiritual listening or a spiritual decision making or spiritual shared goal visioning or whatever you're doing as a leader. That puts another deeper dimension on it, it seems to me. I don't know.
What kinds of things would come to mind when you think of
that? Well, just from when I was thinking about that listening and I was saying or thinking about how it would be to really listen for not only the emotional and the mental processes that were going on maybe behind, but what are some of the spiritual dimensions of what this person might be struggling with. So, and for me, that's maybe the word values or what are their spiritual values mm-hmm. that are in contest here mm-hmm. that might have a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm. When you say spiritual, do you really mean something religious, or do you mean of a strong spirit?
Or meaning, or you know, that's it. We talk about this too in my field in counseling. Some people say they are spiritual counselors, and so we have to think about what do they mean by that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it is talking about meaning, what is the meaning of your life, or what's the meaning of what you're doing, and then the values that you hold to certain activities or beliefs. So I'm just saying, it's a, you know, when you attach all these behaviors and you're, look at all these behaviors, and then say they're, well, they've got a spiritual dimension, that's kind of fun.
It gives it even a different depth or a different take.
Yeah.
Even on listening, I think Parker Palmer would say that if you haven't gone within, then when you hear, you start to project on the other person. So you, not knowingly, it's like some people will ask a group to get their this notion of a shadow or other ways. A lot of people would say, what makes you angry, or each of us angry, is about somebody that somebody else might do or say or whatever, that there's a part of that that seeing in somebody else what we don't like in ourselves. And so they say, we got to do our own work so that we know that, and we're not just sort of projecting our self-dissatisfaction onto somebody else, that rigor will help us be more tolerant. So that examine our own personal energy and that discipline. And as a counselor, I'm sure you probably have thought about that and see that. To answer your question, I don't have sort of a clear notion. I just more and more in the literature, whether, and not just in the literature of the church, I'm talking the literature of leadership. A lot of people are talking about the spiritual nature of leadership.
I see a lot of the term, or some writings, they're using the transformational leadership. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a spiritual term if I've ever heard of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I know what it means when people say, well, I'm going to come in and do a workshop on transformational leadership.
Well, that word originally came from a guy that wrote the sort of beginning theoretical book on leadership, James McGregor Burns. And he said there were two kinds of leaders. He's one that said, he was the first one that sort of said leadership has sort of a value or ethical quality about it. And he said that he had this notion of there are leaders and tyrants. So he wouldn't describe somebody as a bad leader. He'd say they're a tyrant. Mm-hmm. And that leadership then has leaders, there's a value discipline about it. And then he said that there are also leaders, there were transformative leaders and transactional leaders, or leadership work. And so transactional is, let's make a deal. I'll do this for you if you do, and negotiation. Whereas transformative leadership is really turning a corner. It's a different sort of dimension.
Beyond where they might expect to go.
Right. And both are important, just very different. Mm-hmm. And so when you go to Washington, the lobby, you do a lot of transactional leadership.
If you're gonna
hold tight on transforming things in Washington, sometimes you don't get very far, right? It's kind of like she doesn't understand. But that's where originally those terms came from. Some people are using transformational leadership as sort of change, and the leadership of change, significant change.
Would you place Covey's teachings in that letter, transformational?
I think it could be. It could be either way. I mean, a lot of people read Stephen Covey's work. He's certainly part of, I think I would place him in sort of thinking hard and challenging others to think hard about the spiritual nature of leadership, because one of his disciplines is you must be proactive leadership. And that means you've got to know what's important and be for what you feel is important. And you know, he encourages people to write their own personal mission and know for you and your life what's important, and then go for that, work hard at it. And then he's got another discipline, a habit that he calls it, of putting first things first, which is once you know what's important, then you know how to order your time. And then you have to learn the discipline to put what's first in your life. Because if you're not proactive about it, somebody else will be proactive, and then there's that. So there is that, I would argue from him, what he's saying is that there is some kind of value call about what's really important here. And I think that's about in our life. And that's not always easy to do, at least for me, because there's always, it's confusing. There's lots of things to do. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like we're adding something. There's leadership and then there's spiritual leadership. Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is a concern or a current issue? What's behind that adding that quality
spiritual
at this point?
What do you think? I don't know. That was part of our discussion tonight.
I asked you first.
Why do I think that?
Yeah.
More and more people are looking at and connecting value questions with leadership itself. And so the work I get into is that there's more and more discussion of how do you find in a community shared values, things of shared importance? How do we build a common set of core values in community life when communities are getting more and more, individuals and communities are getting more and more different from each other?
Okay.
And there's a lot of research that's been done to say if leadership work isn't grounded on a foundation of values, it doesn't work. And so then,
for groups to function, they need to first come to some sense of shared values.
Right, and knowing what's important was one of the things that somebody said early on, yes. And so, and it's that notion here of if this is our organization, our community, what really holds us up are our people. And what holds the people up is its spirit or its values or what they care about deeply. And so then, how do we have some common ground here? And so I work in a lot of public places, not just in the church, but you know, where we have very different values and very different religions and no religion, and yet there's this sense that we have to have come to the table agreeing that something for us together is important.
Okay.
And that our work together is, what about school spirit? Some of you are working in schools. What happens in our organizations when they cease to have a spirit about them? What happens in our communities when they cease to have a spirit? What's that about, and how do we strengthen that capacity?
So maybe then what it's about is that that's the unique quality that we're looking at, is that ability to bring a group to the point of sensing a shared value,
mm-hmm,
that around which they can rally.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Do you have some ideas of when you've gone into something and you've worked with people and you have lots of different things that are important?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think in an organization or a group that if they identify a mission or a goal, and if they have a strong desire for an end result that will bring them together, even in troubled times like during floods and whatnot, it's amazing how a community will work together to help each other out. And they have a common enemy, or in case of fires or that type.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mission or the goal of the group is pretty obvious,
mm-hmm,
and it's common, mm-hmm, and they're all working together towards an end, mm-hmm, result. And I think that a lot of times can make a difference too.
It's interesting, that notion of being really authentic for real. I remember when I was in Mexico City right after the earthquake. And a lot of people were sort of put at risk quickly. And it was really interesting how the government was way behind the times. The people sort of knew they weren't sitting around writing mission statements.
Yeah.
I mean, they just sort of organized and got things done. You know, and the government was still trying to figure out what had happened.
But
it was for real. It was for, and people knew sort of intuitively what was important.
Right.
And it was genuine. It gets back to that sense of it's really important that everybody agree that it's real, that it's not kind of fabricated.
It's
like there's also a willingness to put aside differences. You know, flawed example of an earthquake could happen to everybody, and even in organizations, if they're gonna, you know, a spiritual leader, I hope would be able to focus on commonalities.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. But an intentional willingness to put it aside. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've struggled with for a long time. I've been involved with a lot of women's organizations, and some of the white women's organizations I've been a part of, we have long discussions about why aren't women of color involved. Mm-hmm. And what I think we failed to do was to discuss with women of color what's important on their agenda, and define things between us that are important together, and we'll show up at the same table. But we weren't rigorous enough to kind of figure out, as we said earlier, kind of knowing, having the same thing that's important. And that, in my experience, it's been much easier to put aside difference when we're sort of focused on something else, mm-hmm. rather than on our differences.
Covey also points out that those things you do when everything is moving right, you gain positive points or positive strokes. But when you do have a problem area, then you get some positive response. You collect on those. Mm-hmm. You know, or when you goof up, you collect back on that, or you get some benefit on those positive points. That you
some
have.
Earned forgiveness.
Yeah. I don't remember what they call it.
Uh-huh. And that might also go back to this notion of trustworthiness. You know, you have to be, you earn trust.
Yeah.
You know, trust is a very complex thing, but it's, you know, you have to earn that. I've taken some notes. This has been helpful. I thank you for coming. We've got to go to church. I'd like to kind of put these ideas together and build on this, but spiritual leadership is a complex thing. I think one of the clear thing is that it does have sort of another life about it, and that from what people have said here, it is important in the nature of leadership, that leadership has some kind of spirit about it, to do the kind of work that we need to do, either in our organizations or our communities or in sort of addressing hard world issues. That I think maybe that's going to be the backbone of the way we have to approach things. So thank you very much.